This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. A new idea has you in its grips. A new character, a new world, a sprawling, twisted web of intrigue, suspense, and romance. And so you find yourself wondering, do I have a series on my hands? How do I get started? What do I need to keep in mind? Is a series really right for me? Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 62 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. If you've ever found yourself in a situation like the one I described earlier, and I know I have, you're not alone. This episode's guest, Sylvia Acevedo, has been there too, and she joined me for a conversation about the ins and outs of writing a series. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Sylvia and her work, she's a journalist and children's book author. In her 20-plus years in news, she covered everything from presidential candidates to food on a stick. She guest-hosted a Milwaukee TV morning talk show and currently freelances at various news publications. As an author, Sylvia is on the leadership team for the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators Wisconsin. She writes mythology for Teens On Up in her God Awful series, which includes her debut, God Awful Loser, followed by its sequel, God Awful Thief, and the final book in the trilogy, God Awful Rebel. Beyond all of the above, Sylvia is a great writerly friend, and I was so glad she agreed to join me for this episode. So with that in mind, let's hop right into my RightsCast Network interview of Sylvia Acevedo. Stay tuned afterward for updates on future episodes of the show, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Sylvia Acevedo, for joining me here on this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's really great to catch up with you here. I know we had a chance to meet one another at this year's University of Wisconsin Writers Institute, where you spoke about writing a series, and so it makes for a great conversation as a podcast as well, I hope. So looking forward to it.
I hope so, too. It was such a great event. It really was, and I was excited to get to meet you, and there were so many good presenters, so many good topics.
Yeah,
I'm glad this one spoke to you.
Yeah, it really did, and I think it'll really speak to other folks who are writing a series or thinking about writing a series as well. So let's try to keep them in mind maybe at first here and ask you, in your view, what is it about writing a series that appeals to so many writers?
Well, I think probably first and foremost, when people start writing a story, from what I've heard from so many people, the story grows in their mind so much that they start to imagine a world and all these characters, and they start writing the first story and they realize, wow, there's enough material here for a couple more stories. And so I think that's where the seed starts probably in their minds as they're thinking about how this story might go. And then I think there are also financial considerations. There's always the nice idea of writing a story and then it having some success and you already have a built-in audience for a second story and a third story and the world's already built and you can expand on it instead of having to start all over again. So there are some incentives to do that.
Yeah, it seems like there's this financial allure, of course. We know that writing isn't the world's most lucrative profession, but if we can make a little bit in the margins by getting good returns on future books, that, of course, is one incentive. And then we have to ask ourselves, though, you know, we might be eager to jump into writing a series. How do we know for sure if the idea or the concept we have, if there is a way to know for sure, how do we know that what we're working with has series potential?
That is a question I get asked so much because I just finished my series. The final book came out August 1st, and so I have a complete series now, and I'm really happy about that. I'm proud about it, and it's certainly something that a lot of people aspire to. So they ask me, how do I know if my story has series potential? And I think, look, I'm not going to say I know everybody's answer, but at least for me, I think that the way you know it is when you are outlining the story, either in your head or on paper, if the story interest sustains you throughout where you have decided the books are going to break. So if the interest sustains you in your outline, your mental outline or your physical outline on paper or in your computer, if it lasts three books, then maybe your series is just three books. If you can see it going for five books, maybe it goes that far. But you notice that I said that you have to outline a little bit, either mentally or physically somehow. I think if you just go into a story willy-nilly, and then you decide later, oh, I'm going to add to this world, I think you're setting yourself up for making a few mistakes early on, where you can add details that will come back to haunt you later or vex you, and you'll say, oh, I wish 5 years ago when I wrote book one of my 7-book series, I wish I'd had this character have this other trait.
Right, and that's certainly a dead end that we can run up against. I know in my own experience, when I first started writing my empathy series, I originally envisioned that as just being a fun short story, quote-unquote fun short story, but it kind of grew over time into a single perspective novel, and then a multi-perspective novel, and then I realized, oh my goodness, there could be a whole series here. And so once the series got greenlit, after I had signed for just that first standalone, I did have to do a lot of that. Okay, well, now that I know what I'm going to be working with going forward, or I think I know, fingers crossed, I had to go in and stitch in a lot of those details to start setting things up and, like, cutting a few other details in the margins that would have suggested a particular arc had come to a close, because I wanted to leave it open for opportunity going forward. So you're certainly right. The outlining process is really imperative for a series, especially once we get into these longer, deeper, more complicated series that seem to be, you see all around now in the realm of fantasy and science fiction.
Absolutely. And I think what you said before is important, that you planned to do one story, but as it kind of grew in your head, you realized there was more to do. And so I think you're right that sometimes just doing the initial story can get you leading into doing more. Now, I had planned to have a series from the start, and that was very helpful. And I would recommend it to people to try to have at least some kind of outline for the future stories. I think it'll save you a lot of heartache and heartburn later on.
I would agree with that, because I have had plenty of heartache and heartburn as I try to make sure I'm setting myself up for success with a series that I have loosely outlined. I know the primary conflict of every book, but that's not the same as being perhaps more meticulous than I'm being, or at least have been so far. So with that in mind, I guess it's probably worth talking too about how these approaches might change depending on the kind of series we want to write. And so that might be an eyebrow raiser for a few people listening in. What are we talking about with different types of series? What are those types of series, and how do they kind of play out?
Well, let me first say what you said about how your goals can change and how your methods can change. When I first started, even though I knew that my story was going to be a series, I was much more loosey-goosey with the first story, with my outline, than I was with the last. By the time you get to the last book, you have all these individual story arcs and the character arcs, and you have questions that you've raised, and you want to make sure you answer all that. So even how your process changes throughout the book can determine how large your series is going to be. So that was good of you to bring that up. I think that's important. Now, your question was what types of series. I've done a lot of research on this because I've been asked to speak about it. And a lot of the research has variations on a theme. And so I kind of boil it down to what I think are three different types of series. I think there are episodic series, sequential series, and spin-offs. And I'll explain each one for you if you'd like me to.
Oh, please.
So an episodic series is a series in which the characters stay the same and do not emotionally change, such as the Magic Tree House, for example. Think about those kids. They don't grow older as the series progresses. And they might learn a little bit here and there, but they generally kind of make the same mistakes or go through the same adventures each time. Episodic can also be a theme that continues with different characters. If you think Goosebumps, for example, those are always about scary stories. And they might have different characters throughout. But the commonality between those types of stories, between Magic Tree House and Goosebumps, is that you can dip into any book in the series and read them out of order, and it's just fine. Each story tends to end with the first chapter kind of explaining the theme, how the story is going to go, and then you can just read on from there out of order, no big deal. And they're pretty much quick hit books. The next type of series, what I consider to be a next step, is the sequential series. And those are longer running stories that span time, and they have multiple plot lines and multiple characters, and the characters age and they learn. So, for example, Harry Potter. that is a series, that a long-running series that spanned time. The kids change, they learn throughout. And Twilight is another example. That series, Bella, who is the main character, she changes vastly from the first story to the end. And if you were to go into the third book without having read the first, you'd be a little bit lost. Sometimes you can figure it out, but it's not really meant to be read that way. So that's a sequential series. And then what I see is the third series is a spinoff in which a popular character or theme from one story will lead to another story. So Ryan, you're going to experience this because your books are going to become so wildly popular that your that your fans are going to ask you to create new books based on a particular character that they love. This happens in romance a lot. So you'll have the main character, the lead male, for example, the readers might want to hear more about him. So there might be another series made on his friends or his brother, for example, the romance that he experiences and that sort of thing. Frasier, if you want to think of TV, Frasier is a spinoff of Cheers, that sort of thing. So those are the three main types of series that I think most series fall into. Mine is a sequential, even though you can read the third without reading the first, really, you're going to miss a lot of the experience. So I would say start at the beginning and read all the way through.
A Little Blue World, the third planet from the sun, one on which 7 billion people go about their daily routines focused only on what's in front of them, until they learn they're not alone in the universe. Despite interplanetary newcomers making it known they've come in search of help and not invasion, mistrust, personal loss, and acts of terrorism mar this clash of cultures, further dividing humankind and the interstellar refugees. As these rifts widen, one ordinary man and 2 immigrants from the stars will be stuck in the middle of it all, the decisions they make either hearkening a new age for both species or leading them to their final end. Now you too can read the series reviewers are calling remarkable and a roller coaster ride. MD News A New World series begins with Contact and continues with Conviction, both of which are now available through 9-Star Press. Get your copies of MD News A New World series in ebook and in print on Amazon today. And you know, this is a really interesting dimension to this conversation for me, as I have started working on a new series while I take a short couple months break from the Empathy Saga. And I had to ask myself when I was developing the idea for this new series, which of these 3 series types was I going to pursue? And I kind of know what my journey was to deciding how I wanted to proceed with this new series. But I'm curious, do you have any advice for writers who are maybe trying to figure out where their series falls in these 3 categories or what might be best for their idea? How can we go about determining which series type is going to be right for our story?
I think there are 2 ways. I think first, you'll need to decide whether your characters are going to grow emotionally and physically. If they aren't going to grow emotionally and physically, you probably have an episodic series going on. And I think you also have to think about the age of your reader or the genre that they're typically used to. So for example, I write children's books. So if I'm writing toward a middle grade audience, the middle grade audience tends to really enjoy episodic series such as The Magic School Bus and Goosebumps. They tend to like to be able to just dip into any book that's available at their school library and not have to read it in order. So the conventions of your genre might make a difference, and what you want to happen to your characters. So I think those are the ways you can decide what will work for you. And of course, spinoff will be when your wildly enthusiastic fans decide it for you.
Right. Sometimes momentum, you know, overtakes us and we are thrust into a world where we must now write about a character we never expected people to be so invested in. It's just funny like that sometimes.
We should be so lucky.
Right. Exactly. Fingers crossed. I'm finding that people are connecting with some not odd perspective characters, but unlikely perspective characters in the Empathy series. So we'll see if that keeps up or not. I don't know if they're going to keep liking these folks the way they do now.
You know, I should say that also sometimes authors make their own spin-off series choice on their own. If they have a character that, like you said, surprises you a little bit and you like them so much. The narrator for my second book is Bacchus, who is the god of wine and theater, drama. And so he just was a hoot to write. He was so much fun. And I had to actually hold back to make sure that he didn't become the main character of the second book. I had to make sure that Cupid continued being the main character. So I could see myself someday writing a spinoff with Bacchus being the main character, but not yet.
And I suppose that's kind of a risk that we run as authors as well. You know, as we are publishing these books and they are being devoured, hopefully, by readers out there, and they're connecting with some characters over others, we start to get feedback as we're writing, and that can really get stuck in our head. You know, for example, you had concerns about not having Cupid remain in the four, and you really had to check that as you wrote. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because it seems like something really important. It seems like a possible... It's one of those, it's like a disadvantage to success or something like that, where because readers really love your work so much that it suddenly gets in your head kind of thing. So a possible...
I also realized that it meant that I needed to develop Cupid more than I was developed. Because one of the reasons you might like a character more than another is because you know that character better. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely made me make sure that I put some special scenes in for Cupid, or some good one-liners, some zingers in there, so that we got to know him as yeah. well, and we're rooting for him too.
Yeah, there's plenty to be learned from distilling readers' input. You know, when we take it on its face sometimes, I think that, you know, we might just accept it for what it is, but when we can really get to the heart of the matter, like you say, and start looking at, well, how developed are these characters relative to one another, that might be your clue into what it is you need to do going forward as well, and to the benefit of all the characters and not just one, for example.
Absolutely.
So we've kind of touched on a possible disadvantage where reader feedback might be clouding our mind and maybe sometimes leads to clarity, so that could be an advantage. But let's focus maybe more on those advantages now. What advantages do you see to writing a series?
Well, I mentioned a couple of them before. I think one of the advantages is that you have already created a world and characters that you can now use for other books in a series. And I think that's, there's so much value in that, because you can now, instead of spending a quarter of your book developing your world and your characters, you can now launch right into this story and know that you are bringing loyal readers along with you, that you already have a built-in audience for these other books that are coming along. And that's, you know, it's a little bit scary whenever you write a standalone book to know if you're going to have any readers for it. With a series, you definitely have them. You have the advantage of knowing these characters, and you can really get into their world a lot more without having to explain the technology of that world, the laws of that world, and describe your characters' looks and their personality types. It's all there. You can move on. And that's a wonderful thing. And I think there's also, again, like I said, a financial incentive, because readers can look out there and they can see these series that have just been so wildly successful. And like the Susan Grafton mystery series, you have those that just one after another, and you can look at that as a cash cow. But I think that there are disadvantages along with a series that should really be tempering you, so that you are thinking it through before you go ahead. Now, and I know that sounds negative. I don't want to sound negative at all. By all means, if you have a series in you, write that series. You go. Just go into it with an open mind, and not necessarily with the glitter stars of the super authors who are selling so wonderfully. There's a reason they're selling wonderfully. They're writing wonderful books.
They're writing wonderful books, and many of them have extraordinary marketing plans. And we know that there are hours and hours of programming on this RightsCast network that are about marketing. There's plenty of advice out there for that. But one thing I do want to explore a little bit more here is you mentioned that there are some disadvantages to writing a series. And I know you said the idea here isn't to discourage anyone from writing a series, but it is important, I think, that we as writers have the knowledge going in, or as much knowledge as we can, or as much insight as we can from folks like you who have been there, to know maybe what some of those disadvantages might be. So if you wouldn't mind, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I think the biggest disadvantage, and again, other people might have different opinions, but I think the biggest disadvantage is if you have decided and made it public to the world that you're going to be writing a series that's, say, 10 books long, you have now committed to allocating your time and effort into those 10 books. And let's say it takes a year to write a book, which is not an unreasonable amount of time at all. You're now saying that you are going to spend a decade on a particular one single project, perhaps to the detriment of other projects that you might be interested in doing. And if the book doesn't meet your definition of success, whatever that is, it'll be a real slog to finish out that series. And the success could be financial. It could be a marketing issue for you. It could be however you view success. If things start to taper off, it's going to be harder for you to want to continue that. And you might get other ideas that pop into your head that you're excited about and you want to spend time with. I always tell people to be open to the idea of series potential. Definitely plan out your series and get started and enjoy it. But I think you need to just think it through a little bit before you shout out to the world that you're going to be doing a 10 novel series. It's quite a lot there. And plus, if you get traditionally published, you'll get a contract in which they will tell you they want it to be a 3-book series. But of course, it's always dependent on the success of the previous. I don't know if your readers, or I'm sorry, I don't know if your listeners have ever really looked at the numbers, but traditionally, the first book in a series is the best-selling because that's the one that introduces all of the readers to the series. And then with each successive book, the readership drops off a little bit. And so you have to realize that as you're sloughing off readers, unfortunately, sloughing off readers, and perhaps sloughing off your own interest, this is why I say you need to outline your series to really see how far your interest takes you and to not commit to making an endless series if you don't think that you have that in your heart and in your soul and in your passion. It's something you want to go into writing to write things that you love. That's why we all go into it. So you want to make sure that you are doing something that you love and not because someone else has inserted the idea that you should be doing a series.
Yes, and I could not agree more. And I will say from my own experience, I love writing the Empathy series. There's a reason that I stuck with it through the first 5 years of working on a book that I had no idea was or would ever be published. I really wanted to get that story out into the world. I have learned, however, that in trying to keep up the series, in keeping to publication deadlines, in meeting readers' expectations, that yes, it becomes a bit of a slog. And that's one of the reasons why I decided, when I write this new series, I'm going to make sure that it is episodic, because I won't have this idea of, I'm going to need 7 books to make sure that I fulfill the full arc of the series. I want to have something that's a little more fast and loose, that I can fire from the hip, that I can, write the first 1, 2, 3 books, let them float, decide if I want to come back to those at some point. So I'm really glad that we discussed these disadvantages too, because it is important to have these considerations in mind, because like you said, it's a great investment of time, it's a great investment of emotional capital, and in your own words, it can come at a detriment to other projects. And it's important that we as writers maintain our passion, but we also have to maintain some semblance of sanity, which is why it's good to ask ourselves these questions sometimes before we write, as opposed to just flying into it and going on Twitter and telling everyone it's going to be a 10-book series, and then
right, we have to have control. And sure, you can have control by announcing it's going to be a 10-part series, but maybe the control needs to come throughout the series as well, throughout your writing, because you want to control your writing destiny.
Certainly. And that's something, worth asking ourselves before we get into the process, of course, is we ask ourselves, what kind of series are we going to write? How many books do we think we might need to, if we're going with a sequential series, for example, how many books are going to be required to fulfill the full arc of the story? Are there any other matters that we might want to take into consideration before we start writing? What does maybe the pre-write process look like for you anyway when it comes to writing a series?
Well, the first book in my series, I did more pantsing, which for your listeners is flying by the seat of your pants writing. I had a very loose outline in which I knew that I wanted to get from point A to point B within 3 chapters, but I didn't really have details of how that was going to go. And then with each successive book, I had to outline more. And so how did it look for me? My process changed so much, Ryan, between the first and the second, and the third. As I said, with the first, when you're writing loosey-goosey, I just had bullet points. By the end of the third book, I had tried so many different ways to organize the details in my story and the plots and the story arcs and the character arcs. I had so many different ways that I had tried different methods to keep all my details straight. And finally, I went to a visual method, which was surprising for me. I never really had done that before. But I had this long Word doc that had just all these details. And I'd look for something, and by the time I found it at the bottom of the document, I forgot what I was looking for or what
been
I was
there.
Doing.
I've been there.
So eventually I printed everything out and I put it across my dining room table, and I ordered all these little lines, these bullet points, into scenes. I pasted them onto paper, and so then I could three hole punch them and flip through each section as if I were reading a book. And so I could see, oh, okay, in this chapter this is supposed to happen, and in more or less this order. Other people use, and I have used as well, post-it notes for certain. For example, I might have a post-it note about Mars, the god of war, or Venus, the goddess of beauty and love. And I would make sure that I wrote down kind of the way she spoke, what she was wearing, what her attitude was to a certain thing, so that I could just take that note on the go with me if I wanted to, you know, write on longhand. For example, if I needed to get away from my computer, I still had my notes with me. So I did that. Some people do character webs. Some people do spreadsheets. I've also done a spreadsheet. So the writing process is going to be different for everyone. But I would say keeping notes, copious notes, is really important, because we writers think of so many different ways that the story can turn out that we start to forget which is the one we chose. And 300 pages later, we don't remember what color we made the character's eyes, or how we had them react to a certain scene, or even their voice can change if it's been a long time. So I think no matter what, keeping notes, however you want to do it, is something that's really important to launching into this process.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, and that you walked us through this sort of visual method that you ended up landing on by the time you got to your third book for maintaining those notes. Are there any other strategies that either you used or that you've heard of other writers using to keep all of this straight for folks who might not be so visual in the end?
Certainly, I've heard of these writing programs such as Scrivener. I personally have not tried them, but I am interested in trying them. The reason I think I kept my notes physical more often than in my computer was because I write on a laptop and screen real estate is at a premium. And so to have a Word document open with all my notes and another Word document with my manuscript, it just got clumsy. So I liked having a physical notes. And also, like I said, it allowed me to leave my computer screen once in a while and write at a coffee shop longhand if I wanted to, for example. But that isn't searchable. So that can become tedious as well. So I'm going to be trying other methods with other series that I'm going to be writing. And I'm sure that I won't be able to give you an answer until I'm 90 as to which I think was the best. And even then I'll have a caveat saying, well, it's the best now.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been the best for series A that I started out with.
Yeah, and I think that there's something very wise in that, and it's this idea that we need to be flexible, because in my own experience, I started as a very visual organizer. I used this note card method. I would create perhaps an outline of sorts on a Word document, but then I would print out that outline and I would take little snippets of individual bullet points and arrange them differently to see how it all kind of laid out. And I found that for me, that didn't prove as effective as once I started working with Scrivener, as you mentioned, and once I started using Scrivener, especially now in conjunction with Google Docs, which I know to some Scrivener diehards might sound like sacrilege, because the idea is that you can do all of this in Scrivener, and yes, I recognize that, but for me anyway, I like using Google Docs to maintain notes, because then, let's say I'm on the go and I've only got my phone with me, but a sudden idea pops into my head or I stumble into some new research, I can hop on Google Docs on my phone real quick, throw those notes in there in the appropriate place, and then once I am back at home and I do use the dual monitor setup here, I will have Scrivener open as I am drafting. I will have my research document open on my laptop screen, and I'm able to verify things as I go using that fun search feature that I depend on so much. I'm going to need to replace my Control F keys in a hurry here. But so it's really amazing how flexibility is important in finding what works for us as individuals. You went from
whatever works for you, and that will change, and that'll change over time. It'll change by project, because your focus on each project will be different. You might challenge yourself specifically to try a different process. I challenge myself through my series in that I gave each book has a different narrator, and there aren't very many series that have a different narrator for each book, but I challenged myself that way on purpose, and so my process had to change.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, Our Airwaves, yes, it's true, anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than a dollar a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, Our Airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise. Right, and it all comes down to that flexibility and challenging ourselves, being very direct sometimes about, hey, I would like to try a totally new process, and I'm doing that same thing right now with the new series I'm working on. I used to be you move forward at all costs with your first draft, you do not do any active revision, you press on and on and on, but I am finding that this new series I'm working on, an entirely different beast from the world of Empathy, well, now I go back and I do that revising, or if I know a scene isn't going to work, I'm not just going to keep it in there, I'm going to fix that straight away, and that's working really well for this series, but I know it wouldn't for Empathy. So flexibility is key. Flexibility is
key. Absolutely.
With all of this in mind, you know, we've talked about so many different things that we need to consider as we're going through the pre-write process and through the writing process, and I myself said that writing a series can be a bit of a slog, which is something I know you have first-hand experience with as well. So how can writers out there keep up their momentum, keep up their passion for a series as they start getting into the weeds with it more and more over time?
Well, I think with every writer, you're going to get a different answer. But I can say that for me, creativity begets creativity. So I'm not the type of person that can step away from her computer and just have these moments of brilliance that come to me that I need to immediately open up Google Docs and send myself a note. I'm much better being creative by writing. So for me, I need to be actively in it. The third book in my series really, I got so much further. I was just plowing ahead by forcing myself to write. And as I'm in that world, you know, these ideas marinate as you're writing. They marinate in your brain, and you get just ideas pop into your head while you're sleeping or while you're showering or, you know, you're doing the dishes or whatever. All these ideas come to you that I don't think they would pop up if you weren't actively writing every day, at least for me. So I think the best way for me to get through the messy middle and the difficult corner that you've written yourself into is to just sit down and just plow through it, because the creativity will come. If I step away, forget it. I might decide, you know, I really do need to cut the grass and re-landscape the entire house immediately before I move on to this. And it's based in fear, and it's based in just, you know, self-preservation, because you know how exhausting it's going to be to come back to it. So I find if you just keep going with it, it all just, it's a lot smoother.
I am so glad that you and I are able to have this particular conversation, because this is now maybe the second or third time that we have started on, you know, one side of a particular approach and then found ourselves on the other side and made it work for us. So you mentioned, you know, plowing ahead with the writing and really going for it to keep up that momentum, because that's where the creativity comes from for you. I am finding that I was doing that method for a while and it was working so super well, but then I put myself in a corner creatively, I think, and realized, oh no, there is a burnout coming and I do not want to feel myself set aflame, you know, creatively. And what I have done now is step away from the empathy series for a couple of months. I'm going to write the first book in this new series. And I actually did this between books one and two of the empathy series as well. I stepped aside and wrote this cozy, you know, sci-fi romance on a farm in a cranberry farm in northern Wisconsin, totally different beast. And those were really helpful for me in being able to come back later to the empathy series with this really renewed sense of purpose and having ideas percolating in the background here and there and seeing the manuscript and the series in a new light when I came back to it. Those were really helpful for me. So it's just incredible, again, that we're stumbling into this truism of you just need to find what works for you. And sometimes it's taking a break, and sometimes it's just making sure you get it done so you don't find yourself just throwing yourself into landscaping because it's based on fear of getting to the page, for example. So there are just so many ways to approach this, and it seems like you and I have found ways that work perfectly well for us, but they diverge in so many key little spots. It's kind of nice, actually.
Well, I should say that I should clarify that when I say I can't step away, I don't mean between projects.
Oh,
definitely
sure.
Between projects, I need to do something else. You know, I might write write picture books. I like writing picture books. So I might take a break and write picture books before I come back to the next project. What I was saying is that I can't step away in the middle of a project to go think about how I'm going to solve this problem, because no way, I won't want to come back because it becomes bigger in your brain. You know, you have this problem where you write yourself into a bad situation and it just becomes bigger the further away from the manuscript you are, for me at least. So I like to stay in it and see how I can manipulate it and just, you know, I just knead the dough and move that clay around and make it work. And then all of a sudden the idea will come to me. And it's, again, it's because these ideas are marinating even when you're away from the keyboard.
Right. Well, there you have it. So thank you for clarifying, because that is something that really is, like you mentioned, it would be to me, I would very much worry about stepping away in the middle of a project. And when I say, I guess for me, stepping away would mean stepping away for more than a week or two, because sometimes a vacation comes up and I'm like, you know, it's going to be for the best to give myself a week to let that percolation occur. But I know that there's going to reach a certain window of time. And once I step outside that window of time, that might be a death knell for a particular project. So,
right. Or else you're just going to have to reread it again from the beginning to remember all the details, because again, you can lose it. Even in the matter of a couple of weeks, you can lose that voice. You can forget kind of the urgency that you had in the first write through.
Right. And that's even if you're the kind of person who keeps meticulous notes about character and your outline, etc., we really can lose those things in the margin. And that can make a really big difference in our ability to push forward with the project, or especially once it comes to revisions and we're suddenly back in chapter one revising, and we go, oh my goodness, look at these three threads I introduced and never once advanced in any meaningful way, but boy, they would mean a lot to theme.
Whoops.
Yeah, right. Very good. Well, I think
we lost a character.
Yeah, we lost a character. Their name changed in the middle of the manuscript. What was I thinking? Right. We've all been there, but that's all part of the fun of writing. And though I know we've talked about some of the disadvantages and the challenges of writing a series, I think, would you agree that ultimately you are feeling very happy about having written this series and it's a very rewarding process overall?
Oh, it's very rewarding. And I have to say, the series, especially the ending, went exactly the way I planned. And I know that some people out there might be listening saying, well, yeah, you're making it happen. Of course it's going to end the way you planned. But, you know, creatives know that, you know, you can have a vision for something and it doesn't quite meet it, or it changed throughout. And you're just like, oh, I never got to introduce this idea or that idea. And no, I really hit everything and it ended exactly the way I wanted it to. And so I'm really, really proud of the last book, and it has a feminist thread in it, which means that Cupid had quite a change of pace. At the first book, he was womanizing, arrogant, a little bit unlikable, and you know, when he got his comeuppance and he got dethroned, you know, people were pretty happy about that, because he really needed to learn how to be a god of love worth talking about. And then he had this giant transformation to the end of the third book where he is actually championing feminism. And so it's, I mean, wow, how do you get from one side to the other? I was really pleased with how it turned out. And so I am also looking at writing more series in the future, including an episodic series at some point. So, there's a lot of satisfaction in writing a series and having just kind of this world that you really, really can dig your teeth into and just, you know, bite down and enjoy this fantastic world that you've created. There's a lot of joy in that.
There really is, and you are absolutely a testament to that. So thank you very much, Sylvia, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Writes Cast.
Thanks for having me.
There you have it, my full interview of Sylvia Acevedo, author of the God Awful series, including God Awful Loser, God Awful Thief, and God Awful Rebel. For more on Sylvia, you can visit her website at sylviaacevedo.com. Thanks to Sylvia for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. I'd also like to thank the RightsCast Network's patrons for their financial support of our programming, which comes in the form of per-episode or per-month contributions at patreon.com/rightscast. The RightsCast Network family of patrons gets some wonderful perks and rewards in exchange for their support, including early ad-free access to every episode of our programming, discounts on my editing services, and RightsCast Network swag. Sound like something you'd be into? The amazing Laura Hazen certainly is, and I owe her an additional tip of the cap for her support at $3 per episode. So whether you can chip in $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month, start contributing to the programming you value today by visiting patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the RightsCast Network is author Andy Peters, who will join me to discuss what goes into creating an anthology. That episode will debut on August 2nd, 2019, so be sure to tune in then. Until that episode debuts, you can find the RightsCast Network online at rightscast.net or as RightsCast on Twitter. And I'm at rrcampbellwrites.com or I am rrcampbell on Twitter. You can, of course, always email us at rightscast@gmail.com as well. It's great to hear from listeners, so please don't hesitate to reach out. That's all for now. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.